Welcome to The Gauge, a podcast brought to you by Green Gauge, the first fully integrated financial services group, bridging the traditional financial services space with the new digital innovations in crypto assets and blockchain. In this series, we gauge expert opinion on the latest tech trends and bring you a measured approach to discussing key developments in the world of blockchain and digital assets. Today, Sean Kiernan, CEO of Green Gauge, meets Rolf Merchant, director of the strategic advisory firm Audley, to discuss the politics of cryptocurrency. There is currently a sort of arms race for countries wishing to become a global hub for tech, but will anyone do anything really transformational? How do we rediscover boldness in politics and policy formation when it comes to crypto? And looking at what the polls suggest as an outcome for the next UK general election, what approach will Labour take towards the tech sector and towards the UK as a home for cryptocurrency more broadly?
I'm delighted to have Rolf Merchant with us today from Audley. Rolf, welcome. It'd be great to hear from you, kind of who you are, what you do.
Thank you, Sean, and thank you so much for having me on The Gauge. It's great to be talking with you. So I have a bit of a fintech background. My last job was at Innovate Finance, the industry body for fintech, where luckily I was head of public affairs and looked a lot and thought a lot about how the fintech industry and politics and government sort of collide with each other, try to work with each other, so really interesting work. And now I work at Audley, which is a boutique consultancy where we help clients with complex issues relating to reputation, communications, and policy and politics. So a lot of interesting work there, a lot of campaign-focused work, very exciting stuff. And yes, touching on fintech, tech, financial services still as well. So it's a great space to be in right now as well.
Fantastic. I'm going to go straight to the macro. We've been discussing an arms race between countries around the global tech sphere. We know Rishi Sunak has been very keen, also given his background with a love for California, to position the UK as a tech hub. And his comments in Tech Week kind of intimated that he's raring to go. But the UK is not operating in isolation. There's Macron in France, what's happening in the US generally. Where do you think the lay of the land is in terms of what we can do to win as a tech center?
Well, you're absolutely right that there is this big global competition on right now between countries and cities to get themselves to that global tech hub status. And you have to ask really, well, what makes a global tech hub? Well, it's got to be global in reach, hasn't it? You've got to have people coming from all four corners of the earth to invest, to set up, to do business. And there needs to be a bit of buzz, kind of marketing chatter around the hub as well to create that sort of credibility. And in tech, obviously, Silicon Valley is way ahead as the global hub. But you do have a few places which aren't too far behind on some measures. So London, Singapore, Boston, I guess, Tel Aviv as well. And then a few places, Paris, perhaps coming up there, other places in Southeast Asia. So actually, the competition is to be the second global hub behind the Valley, the best of the rest. And what we've seen in the past few years is these hubs are really doing a block-by-block attempt to build up their positioning. So some regulatory changes here, new pieces of legislation to support tech, maybe some funding from government, some sort of new body to help encourage the growth of the tech sector domestically or coming in from international. And that's the sort of name of the game, really. I don't think we're likely to see this sort of really big revolutionary changes to help pull London or anywhere else up the rankings. You mentioned Emmanuel Macron and what he's been doing in France. And I think that's a really good example of where political leadership can make a difference. So Macron's put a lot of personal energy and drive behind creating a French tech brand, Le French Tech, as they call it. I mean, the fact that they use the English language makes you think, well, maybe we won that one, but I'll put that to one side. What he's done is put, as I say, personal backing to this. He wants to meet with tech investors. He takes the time to sort of do the photo ops and do the sort of personal glad-handing. He's a natural salesman, Macron, and he's done a great job of this. I mean, France was sort of nowhere in the tech sector conversation 5-8 years ago. Now it's probably number one in the European Union. So as I say, it goes to show what's possible with focused political leadership from the top and a real drive to make a change and impression. It's not just about PR, by the way. You know, they have made some substantial policy changes as well. But as I say, it's about the leadership that's required to make a difference. Now, what could the UK do that's a bit more transformational? It's hard to say. I mean, Sunak has got some interest in AI, and he's quite keen on having this sort of international summit for AI regulation. And what I thought was quite interesting with this new AI task force that's been set up is in the sort of press release announcing it, they described how it was based on the vaccine task force, which is obviously quite successful. And what was different about that is they took a lot of the operation of it outside of government, and that gave it a bit more latitude and ability to act quickly and decisively, which helped with the success. So I'm not quite sure whether how that will work in practice, but there might be something to be said for moving when you've got these sort of big regulatory challenges or this desire to create a to get ahead of the international competition in some kind of tech question, involving the private sector a bit more, taking it outside of the day-to-day of government, that might be a route through. But, you know, otherwise it's got to be a really concentrated and rapid policy and regulatory changes plus tax incentives and all the rest of it to move up the rankings very quickly. But I think, well, maybe we'll see something transformational, but I think the likelihood is actually that block-by-block approach is more likely to remain the case for the foreseeable anyway.
A blockchain, perhaps.
Nice.
Yeah. I was intrigued in the two examples you gave of how you can maybe cut through and have bold policy changes. You mentioned an individual, Macron in this case, or Sunak, really pushing their agenda to say we're open. And also the example of the vaccine task force, where there was a specific kind of almost out of government group of people looking to push. One of the trends we've seen a lot in kind of the modern Western world is managerialism or technocracy as a kind of bedding in of making things happen according to an agreed regime. How do we see kind of, particularly in the crypto space, potentially a way to work with that? Because I think it's here to stay, but to push through some change for maybe the UK to be a crypto hub, which is also Sunak's stated aim.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, isn't it? I wonder how far technocracy is bedding in Western politics, because in the last few months, there's been a bit more of a populist wave in politics, which is sort of the antithesis of technocracy, really, I suppose, isn't it? So in Italy, Spain, there's a rise of populist parties. And even in countries that we think are quite liberal in their politics, Netherlands, Germany, there's a lot of radical populist parties emerging. That's not to say they'll end up forming governments, but it's enough to drag politics in that direction. So I'm not sure it's quite, you know, there's a bit more of that wave. It's a bit more of a balance. But having said that, of course, France, Macron, he's quite technocratic in his approach, isn't he? I think Olaf Scholz in Germany is as well. Biden, perhaps. Sunak in some ways, for sure. So it's not a clear picture. And I'd also say, and you might disagree with me on this, but I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with technocracy, actually. If you were to speak to a lot of people in the business world and your average voter, they'd be okay with the evidence-led, expert-led approach to government. It's not always the right solution, but there's something to be said for it. Managerialism, though, which is the other thing you mentioned, that's a different kettle of fish. That's more of the I characterize that more of a steady as she goes, let's just tinker at the margin, let's make sure we're really efficient in what we're delivering kind of approach to government, which is obviously not that inspiring. And actually, when you consider some of the big challenges that we're facing in the Western world, demographic, economic, technological, environmental, managerialism probably isn't going to cut it. But you can totally see why we're here with that, because government finances are so strained. There's no political will for austerity anymore right now. So tax cuts are very difficult. And on the other side of the ledger, huge funding for new things or, you know, backing new industries is hard to come by as well. So how do we rediscover that boldness, I suppose, is the question. How could we, I mean, you asked about crypto, for example. I think one of the great challenges is that there aren't many people in politics with a tech background right now. Actually, there aren't, at least in the UK. I mean, I can't speak for everywhere in the world. There aren't that many people with a business background. So you wonder, therefore, whether we're going to get people with those kind of ideas and upbringing in business and bring it into policy. And there's a whole, you know, kind of whole broader question about whether public life is an attractive proposition for anyone anymore with all the scrutiny and so much aggression on social media and the fact it's so antisocial in terms of hours and the pay's not very good and all the rest of it. But I would ask whether we're likely to see more public policy and more politics which is supportive of tech until we see more people from that world actively engaged in politics. And by the way, that doesn't just mean being an MP. It could be in public, you know, it could be in the civil service in that kind of realm, or it could just be putting your head above the parapet and being involved in public debates a little bit more. That would be one answer and one of many. But as I say, it's sort of, there are all these really big issues that we're grappling with in the West and technocracy over here, populism coming through. It's hard to sort of cut through all of that. But as I say, I do think there needs to be more of those people with that tech knowledge, that tech background coming into that world. It might just shift things a little bit.
To bridge the gap, and perhaps even, as we've outlined, technocracy and populism have a lot of relationships that are causing various forces to emerge. Yeah. One question I had to you is in terms of making policy kind of work. And for example, we have the Financial Services Markets Act now as an act, not a bill, which I thought was quite speedy, looking at the context of international developments, particularly in the US. How often do these laws, in terms of your assessments over time, how long does it take for them to actually go down the system and percolate and lead to real change in the managerialist approach to pushing things through?
Gosh, that's a huge question. It's quite hard to generalize, actually. There are some bills which take forever to be formed, some which may not. I mean, the online safety bill is a great example. It's been going for years and years and years. It's still stuck. It's crazy. But yeah, Financial Services Markets Act, that was quite speedy and quite far-reaching in some ways. And you can see how it could translate through relatively speedily. Within, you know, 6 months to 12 months, you could start seeing some changes in the market. There are some of those more broad sweeping things in the regulatory sphere. And I'm thinking, for example, open banking is a good example that actually the effect was sort of in a sense overnight, but it's just taken so long for the market to adjust. And there are still some issues with how it's implemented. That was really transformational and it's still sort of working its way through as it evolves. And when did that kick off? 2018 or so? So those bigger changes can take a while. As I say, it's just hard to generalize. Sometimes I think I would just say that regulatory tweaks can end up being slightly more interesting and result in slightly bigger change than huge pieces of legislation, which can be very sort of multifaceted and become quite muddled as they move through Parliament and random things are thrown in and pulled out. Government has actually got, generally speaking, a bit more ruthless and efficient in pushing through legislation and allowing a lot less time for debate in Parliament. Backbench MPs hate that, of course, but it's seen now as a sort of the way that legislation is made. So, yeah, it's difficult to answer your question, to be honest with you. It's hard to generalize, as I say, but there is a potential for legislation to make a big change. But then small regulatory tweaks or secondary legislation can do things quite speedily as well. So it's not always the big axe to look for. It's the smaller things that can create market change as well.
Am I allowed to ask what small changes you might make?
Oh, gosh, imagine having that power. So there are some things with the way, just speaking in fintech context, the FCA operates, which could be changed, I think, through smaller tweaks. And that would sort of just be about, so there's this international competitiveness thing with the FCA. So how can we have a regard to what others are doing? Just to go back to that question about the kind of global hub status. And if there was the drive or the sort of mindset shift to be a bit more open to new entrants, new tech, the FCA has done a pretty good job of that, by the way. But just to keep following that through and keep that momentum and keep that thought process as crypto firms, other fintech firms grow and expand and actually become something really meaningful in the market, I think that would be great to see. That would be one. I don't know. There are many others I could pick on, but that's an obvious one to me, I think.
We discussed, as you mentioned, the difficulty to get expertise and technology into the system. I mean, this is quite a lucrative career. People make pots of money, and to go into a job that's perhaps a bit lower paid or more risky is difficult. And one of the things that I've been hopefully trying to do, and also with the likes of the podcast you've been now contributing to, is education and just bringing awareness around trends and what we can do to support. What do you think we as industry participants can do? And those would be the listeners of the podcast to kind of support this move. Not to say we just do bold things for the sake of being bold, but to make the UK a proper tech hub.
Yeah, I think the first thing I'd say is there's lots of opportunity to do that, and one can make changes. It can feel an awful lot at times that politics is very impenetrable. It's very to outsiders. It's a totally bizarre world, which doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And it can feel like there are a lot of blockers to getting stuff done. But I would say it is possible to make change if you do it in the right way. Technology, the sector in general, has got this added challenge, of course, of there being quite a lot of fear around sort of public policy conversations about technology. And you think about the headlines we've seen in recent years. So crypto is a massive scam. We're going to lose all of our money to it. AI is going to kill us. You can't trust new entrants in financial services. All of those things evoking a lot of fear. So that's something you need to contend with as well, which is an added challenge for the tech sector. But I think there are a few things you can think about to challenge some of that and make some progress in making change, as you say. I think one is you do need to be able to get ahead and shape the broad narrative about your technology or your bit of the sector and make it as positive as you can before the negative perceptions and the skepticism kind of sets in. And that is a real risk. And we've seen it happen with lots of different parts of the tech sector. So it's what people call the air wall, basically. It's where you create a media environment or create the conversations that can indirectly influence people in government and politics to look upon things a little bit more favorably, as I say, before the naysayers get in and start slating you. You know, it requires a lot of thought and a lot of campaign effort, but certainly can be done. So that's the air wall. And the other side of the coin is the ground wall, which is directly engaging with the people that matter, the decision makers, the influencers who can pull the levers that can result in the change that you want to see. And they have to be the right people, of course. They have to be the people who can make the change in they can be difficult to identify and find. But if you're smart about what you're saying to them and you're very clear about your ask, you know, that can yield good results and you can start to build up a good network of allies and supporters. I think the other thing, just as a final point to answer your question, that people in tech need to think about is if you can answer the question, what is it that, well, there's two questions actually. One, what is it that my technology, my innovation can bring to the man in the street? What is the real life benefit of it? Where's the sort of humanity in all the technology? Because you can get into all this sort of jargon and abstract ideas, which become totally lost in the real economy and real people's lives. So what change are you making to citizens, consumers, businesses? That's a really vital question. You can't go without that. The other one as a sort of bonus is how can your technology directly help the government in its work or public services? So just to cite open banking again, this is actually a really good example because HMRC love open banking because it means people can pay their taxes more efficiently, which I know is a really dull example, but government loves open banking now because it's seen it in action and is helping the running of day-to-day services. So it needn't be as direct as that. I mean, you could have solutions to combat fraud, make people's lives, like navigating the financial services world a bit easier and a bit more safe. You could have more data and transparency around how certain markets are operating, which could be really useful to inform policymaking. Even just making markets run more efficiently, that is beneficial for government and what it's trying to do. So if you can answer that kind of question and those officials can see how it will help them with the running of government or public services, that's a real benefit if you can do that. And I think most of the time you probably can, even if indirectly, tell a story along those lines.
It's very interesting to hear the air wall. I've never heard that concept before. And I think in a way, you have to have a lot of foresight as an industry and a lot of money from the early stages to project the air wall of positivity. And in a way, for crypto specifically, like it's quite a difficult move to make if it's a ship that's already sailed. One area that I'm quite keen to follow is the broad sphere of what's called Web3, which is newer and I think an evolution, if you will, of the early days of crypto into open access architecture, very much in the vein of open banking or even open finance as we see it emerge. Do you think that there's something there that we can, as an industry, kind of create a narrative to help that, very much driven by the services rather than leading with the tech, what we can open up for people?
I think definitely, without doubt, yes. As I say, you start from this slightly difficult position of a lot of technology and how technology works being quite a vexed issue because people just aren't sure about what's going on here. So there is that education piece to start off with, of course. But this sort of air war idea, you can create industry groupings, you can create broader voices, you can create broader coalitions to help create a sort of bigger voice and a bigger mass, if you like. And it's helpful, I think, sometimes to think about these things in campaign terms. So my boss, Audley Chris Wilkins, who used to work at 10 Downing Street, he's got this view that every campaign's winnable. You start with that position. You just have to be able to frame the question of the campaign in a really effective way. And he often talks about framing the campaign, framing your technology in this example, your company, say, as the answer to the question of the campaign, the only answer to the question of the campaign. So Web3, what's it solving? What's a brilliant thing it's going to do? And how can you position it to be the obvious answer to a certain problem? Now, I don't know what that is, but people in Web3 can probably answer that question. I hope they can anyway, because that's the way you start to key the interest and start to be able to tell a bit of a story around it. So as I say, I think it's totally possible. I think there's loads of really exciting stuff happening. You just have to be able to frame it in the right way.
I have a last question, which is a little bit of a political one. Greengage did a digital parliamentarians report earlier this year where we looked at various MPs and members of the House of Lords and their records on saying Bitcoin or blockchain, positive, negative, neutral references. We're looking at maybe a change in government. I mean, nobody knows. The world's quite a fickle place. And Labour has obviously a different take on a lot of the policies that we've been discussing. Are there any individuals in Labour, or is there any themes that, particularly for our more Web3 crypto blockchain space, that we should be thinking of?
The next general election, I mean, who knows? It's really odd that both sides are kind of talking down their chances and being quite negative and quite defensive. It is still 12 months away, at least 12 months away. So, as you say, a lot can change in 12 months in politics. But you're right. I mean, the polls have Labour in the lead, and that would seem to be where the smart money is at the moment. In terms of issues, it's quite interesting to see Labour's positioning and posturing with tech. There's no hard policy. And to be fair, you wouldn't expect that because we're still so far away from manifesto writing and an election campaign. But you can see a few indications now. So Keir Starmer Labour leader went to London Tech Week and he spoke there. And actually, the fact he was there was quite a promising sign, shows he wants to engage with the industry, take it seriously. He said some quite sensible things about AI regulation as well. Labour has scrapped its plan to have a tax on big tech, so there's a bit of a softening of position. There's a lot of interest as well among Labour MPs in green tech, clean tech, sort of what we call in the business world ESG solutions. I don't think that it's interesting. That wording hasn't really penetrated into politics, but anything that's going to help with environmental change and helping the less well-off in society is going to be popular with Labour. So that's something to think about. Just generally speaking, though, Labour want to meet businesses. They want to go and have conversations in small groups. They don't want to be hiding behind a wall or anything, and they want to show that they're taking this seriously, that they're understanding the issues, and there's something to be worried about with the Labour government. So, as I say, in terms of posturing, I think all that's to the good. You asked about leading lights. So we ran a roundtable with Darren Jones earlier in the summer. Darren is a Labour MP. He is chair of the Business and Trade Committee as well, and has made a bit of a reputation for himself, sort of cross-examining corporate bosses coming in. It's quite entertaining. But he's someone who could well end up as a minister or even a secretary of state. And he's got a tech and business background, and he's got that personal interest, and he really seems to sort of understand this stuff. So, you know, that's promising. People talk about Johnny Reynolds as well, who's shadow business secretary at the moment. I remember he came to UK FinTech Week a few years ago, spent ages talking to the startups. You know, he was really interested and really personally engaged with it. Tulip Siddiq as well, shadow city minister, people talk up. So there's a lot of, you know, you can see the beginnings of a good group, a good sort of solid ministerial team looking after tech and business there. There are a few unknown quantities, though, of course, and I think it's not an unfair assumption that a lot of tech, crypto, bits of fintech, maybe AI, are going to face a bit more regulation, a bit of tightening. I think that's, I don't want to say it's inevitable, but it does seem likely. But actually, if you put all those things together, so Labour interest in tech, wanting to meet businesses, there's still time to influence the policy sphere before the election, and maybe there's a little bit of work to do to sort of de-risk. Now's a really good time to be engaged and speak to Labour people and trying to bridge that gap and, you know, doing your air war, doing your ground war, because, you know, the run-in isn't that long. And you don't want to miss that opportunity to influence the debate with Labour and the incoming government, possible incoming government. As I say, I think it's a good opportunity to do it now.
Great. Well, this has been a lot of fun and very informative. Rolf, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Sean. It's been a great pleasure.